Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of The Yield. Today is one of our another episode of our Tech Talk series, and I will be introducing our honored guests in just a few seconds here. I see people are coming on board. There's about 12, but we'll go ahead and get started. But just a few quick bookkeeping items, of course. Do check out our website at yieldstreet.com. We have a bunch of open offerings and a few launching today as well. And if you are an originator who's looking to raise some capital through Yield Street, you can write to us at originations@yieldstreet.com, or you can go to the website and click on the raise capital link in the footer, and someone will get to you right away. So without further ado, it is my absolute pleasure and honor to introduce you to our guest today, Craig J. Lewis, the founder and CEO of GigWage. Welcome, Craig. We are so thrilled to have you here.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
So Craig has had a very interesting journey to where he is today as an entrepreneur and founder. So I'm just going to turn it over to you, Craig, and I would love to hear. I'll just leave a little bit of this thing here. He started his professional life as a basketball player, and now he is the founder and CEO of one of the leading payment platforms for the gig economy. And I'll just leave it at that. And Craig, just we'd love for you to fill in the gaps. It's so fascinating.
No, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, to your point, I played professional basketball in Europe. And then when I wrapped up and retired, I ended up getting married and starting a business. And like most athletes, I started something in the sports realm. So I was doing this like sports marketing and events company. And this is a whole nother podcast we could do. But my business partner ended up passing away, and I got sued by the bank and all this kind of crazy stuff. And I learned a lot from that experience as an early entrepreneur that really shapes who I am today. But it burned me out on two things. I didn't want anything to do with sports, and I definitely didn't want anything to do with entrepreneurship. And so I ended up getting a job at this little small payroll company called ADP. And that kind of set me.
Little guys, I remember them.
Yeah, right. And so that kind of set me on this path. And I joined ADP, I think it was 08, as a services company. And as one of the top sales reps, ended up selling their first cloud-based product called ADP Run. And that's where I fell in love with the democratization of getting people paid, and kind of been on a journey ever since then, and, you know, discovered Silicon Valley and thought I wanted to bring that to the payroll space. And so just putting one foot in front of the other, that's kind of led us here today.
That is so amazing. And, you know, like people generally, when they hear about tech and fintech and startups, they usually associate that with a very particular geographical area of the country.
Yeah.
And it's just so I'm super curious about, like, what was that experience like to get into this entrepreneurial journey in away from Silicon Valley or away from even New York City, which is also particularly for fintech is becoming become quite a hotbed.
Yeah. I was in my professional career selling technology, and I was traveling a ton. And I was spending about 220 days a year on the road, selling, talking, keynoting, conferences, customers, partners, you know, kind of doing the whole road warrior thing.
A lot of reward miles.
Right. But you know what happened? Actually, I discovered a friend of mine had come across this opportunity on Twitter, and it was called Startup Weekend. And it was this 54-hour kind of, you know, hell on wheels, hackathon type of thing. And you go in and you pitch an idea and you try to build something. He had discovered it on Twitter, told me about it. I was traveling in, I think I was in Phoenix at the time, and I decided to attend one of these deals. And that's where I kind of fell in love with this concept of modern technology and building. And so I used to just sell the stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then I fell in love. I was like, man, people built like a working prototype in like a weekend. So then I got hooked and I started going to these startup weekends all over the country, discover Silicon Valley. And eventually over time, just realized that people were building things in every city, everywhere, in every industry. And I thought it'd be important to bring that to an industry in which I had relationships and expertise. And so, you know, I wasn't based in Dallas when we kind of had the idea, but I've seen tech being built all over the world. And I thought, wow, if all these people can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. And Dallas is your hometown, of course. So it definitely creates that personal connection to the place as well, which is super important, I think.
For sure.
So it's pretty cool that, you know, getting that exposure to like what technology is possible of doing and how it can help in many different ways. But also there's this, and we were just talking about it a little earlier, there's this element of need, right? You know, what there is a particular pain point that some of the best companies like GigWage that are so successful, they're on a quest to solve for a particular pain point. So what pain point were you trying to solve through tech and have successfully solved through tech?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think it was actually obvious to us at the beginning. So we started off on a kind of a different payroll and payments journey. And I actually read this article about, McKinsey did this report about the global independent workforce, aka the gig economy. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me that in all my kind of payroll experience and all the ancillary services around it, right? HR, timekeeping, credit card process, right, and all these things, no one had really established themselves as the payroll company for the gig economy. And that was kind of the working premise that I started with. And, you know, we always talk about GigWage was built for contractors by contractors.
Awesome.
And so we solved the kind of payment problems that contractors experienced because we all had experienced it. But what we realized that was unique to us was that the companies that needed to get you the money didn't have the technology or the infrastructure to do it the way you wanted. Mm-hmm. It was less about you as a contractor receiving it and more right. about the lack of infrastructure to send it. And so we went from there and started to build.
And of course, I'm very curious about one thing. We'll get to that in a second. Your background selling software must have come in super, super useful to scale the company and to bring it to where it is today.
Yeah, sales is exciting. So, you know, it's funny though, because I have such a strong go-to-market background, we actually over-indexed on product and technology in the early days to really compensate for my, you know, as a solo non-technical founder per se, mm-hmm. I really wanted to lean into product and technology early. And so we spent the good part of the early days really focused on product, like really listening to the customers, really looking at the nuanced feature sets and,
right.
and capabilities that they needed and understanding the best ways to do that and start with scale in mind. And so we started there and we actually, you know, have enjoyed that space as a product first and tech first company. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eventually you come up for air and you realize you've built something special that a lot of people can take advantage of. And so we're excited about that part of the journey as well.
So I'm very curious to, and as I'm sure our listeners are as well, to hear about that moment when you kind of like unveiled your product to the world. But before we get there, Andy, it's like a really good segue from what you just said, coming from a non-technical background, and I'm a geek, so I'm particularly very curious about this. What was your personal journey to getting into a space that you didn't have a background with, like, you know, and how did you, because building product and building tech is obviously not an easy thing to do.
So. Hard. Yeah. It's really, really hard. To your point, I sold it and I sold complex products. And so there was this unique understanding of the complexity and the power of technology. But yeah, no, it was about a all-out commitment and grit and determination and immense amounts of learning and mistakes. And I often joke, you know, when I first started this journey as a non-technical founder, I had to lean on the things that I knew, which were payroll and kind of go to market today, you know, I can sit down with the most technical of them all and have a conversation in general, but especially about what we've built. And so it took a lot of learning, a lot of focus, and then hiring great people around me, right? Which for me allowed me to lean on my skill set. Could I convince someone to come build what I want to build versus the things that they know they can build? And so, but it was a journey for sure. I made a lot of mistakes along the way. It took a long time to really figure out how to ship product. Took a long time to really understand what that means.
What was the sort of zero day like? Okay, well, you go from the world not knowing about GigWage to the world knowing that something like GigWage is here to help you. What was that? I'm sure that's like a fresh memory in your mind, despite however many years pass.
Sure. When we launched the MVP, we had a paying customer the first week. Wow. And I knew we had something, not because we had a paying customer, but because the MVP was so crappy. It was a very, very, very bad product, but it was a live working product. And because it was so bad and people were still willing to pay for it, I knew we had something. And it was very organic. And so I knew that if people would pay for this bad thing, imagine what we could do if we continue to iterate and get better. And so we launched it. We had a paying customer. We knew something was up because we knew we had launched something really bad. But for me, again, as a non-technical founder, it was really important to get something in the market, right? Something shipped, something live, something sellable. That kind of first day, first week of making it available for people to pay contractors, for companies to pay contractors, it was a powerful moment for us.
Yeah, I remember the sheer raw nervousness of, you know, hitting that switch and saying we're live, and
we're
like
live.
Watching the dials come in, the numbers starting to tick up, and like, you know, this is it's a weird combination of utter horror and super super excitement. You know, it's
exactly.
Like hard to describe that. Lots of pizza. So let's talk payments a little bit, of course, because like, you know, in both like what we do at Yield Street and of course what you do at GigWage, moving money around, moving money from point A to point B is at the core of it, right? You know, at Yield Street, it's an investment platform. We take allocations from investors, and as they earn yield, as they earn interest, we send those payments back. What was so payments, as I'm obviously you're an expert in this. So this is a super old, decades old underlying technology, Nacha or ACH or wires, and navigating that is let's put simply, it's a nightmare, right?
Yeah.
And there are companies now, there are infrastructure companies that kind of abstract that out away from you, so you can build on top of those. What was your approach to solving that? Like, did you partner with someone who's handling the automation of payments? Did you build your own Nacha ACH interface? What was that like?
Yep. So when we first started the MVP, we just tried to get something out. I think we actually launched on top of like Stripe Connect, which was a horrible idea. But I love Stripe, by the way. It's a great company.
Stripe's great. Yeah.
It's a great, phenomenal company, just not for that use case. But we were just trying to get something out there. And so then over time, what we realized was, and this is really interesting. So GigWage is a bit more than just payments in this space. We're payroll, payments, and banking. So we have everything from W-9 to 1099 from a compliance perspective built into the application. We have payments, which we consider, we did end up, because ACH is still massive, we mastered the ACH rails. And so we do same day ACH, next day ACH, but we also do direct to debit. So interchange integrations with MasterCard and Visa. So payroll payments and then banking. Everybody that's exposed to the GigWage platforms has some type of access to an FDIC insured account, bank account, and that goes for the companies and the contractors. So there's a unified platform of payroll, payments, and banking that people have access to that kind of makes us special and unique. So payments was just one kind of one aspect. But to your point though, ACH is a very antiquated technology, and you see a lot of stuff now with RTP, real time payments are coming out. But we knew ACH by itself wasn't going to be enough, but we knew it was going to be, you know, the way money gets paid out in payroll is payroll companies are predominantly ACH organizations. And so we wanted to get really good at it. We didn't want to be beholden to the traditional kind of 2, 3, 4 day ACH. And so we figured out how to really start to lean into same day and next day ACH years ago. And then obviously now with RTP being out, and then how does ACH harmoniously work with other payment types? How do we provide flexibility so that people get paid when they want to get paid, how they want to get paid, where they want to get paid? And so we partnered with, you know, some gateways and facilitators. We partnered with banks. We built some of our own stuff. We now have this really wonderful abstraction layer that allows Gigways to really just speak to all different types of banks and processors for different types of use cases. And so depending on the context of how the money needs to move, we have some optionality.
It's interesting you mentioned RTP, because that is the big, I don't know if you can call it the next big thing, but obviously
everybody's talking about it,
but it's always this balancing act, right? Between like, okay, well, RTP in concept and theory, and in most of the times in practice is a beautiful thing, but it also, there is a reason there are certain kinds of delays put in.
Yeah. There's right? Intentional friction.
Exactly. And a lot of it is around like preventing and being able to scan for fraudulent activity. Like what is your gig wages approach to kind of striking the balance between efficiency and speed and security and protection against fraud?
Great question. And this is why the kind of payroll payments and banking all unified matter, because it helps with, you know, kind of KYB and KYC. But so most payroll companies, if you will, really most payments companies as well, even banks, are all designed and optimized with a certain risk tolerance. And they're optimized with risk kind of at the forefront of it, anti-money laundering, KYC, et cetera. Gigway was built and optimized for speed and flexibility. So we knew there was going to be some inherent risk in, you know, doing a payroll instantly. So what we had to do was, we don't just think about the payment or, matter of fact, let me break this down a little bit more. We don't just think about it as a transaction. We think about the payment, and then what is the context around the payment, right? What's the use case that the payment is being sent for? And because we're so focused on simply helping companies pay contractors, we know a lot, right? And so we do the KYC, we do a lot of the KYB, we have a lot of the anti-money laundering tactics before, during, and after the payment with that context in mind.
Interesting. So you kind of built this kind of risk analyzer based on the metadata around the payment or on the transaction itself to give it like some sort of a confidence score. It's like, okay, well, this one is safe to pass through. And
absolutely. Because we know where it's coming from, what it's being sent for, and who it's being sent to. And so then with that data, you can make some really smart decisions. Now, up front, if a company comes to GigWage, they've got to be a known business, right? A known entity. Yeah, and so in the onboarding process, we've added a lot of automation there to kind of verify the businesses, the business owners, but do that in a seamless way that has a great user experience.
Yeah. This is actually, you know, man, we can talk about this forever.
All day.
It's just that, you know, like when you build a fintech is one of those spaces where, you know, there is a lot of interesting innovation happening all around simplifying old processes, reducing frictions, like, you know, making it more efficient, more fast. But there is it's so interesting how it kind of, in most cases, comes down to a few things that we need to solve for: the friction around getting KYC AML verification, the friction around, in our case, there is an extra step because a lot of our investment products are for what's called accredited investors, which is a whole extra step in verification that we need to go through. And how do you create an experience around it that takes the user through these necessary steps for their own protection, but at the same time doesn't be such a deterrent that they just get discouraged and just stop and they fall off the cliff?
You know? Yeah, right. You don't want to ask somebody 150 questions, right?
Exactly.
it is a balance, and we're constantly iterating. We're constantly tweaking at GigWage. We recently just hired a new compliance manager. She was, you know, formerly a CFO at a bank, a regional bank, and had a lot of experience with kind of the online banking portion of, you know, onboarding new businesses. And so that's one of the things we're constantly talking about is how do you strike that balance of, you know, growth and user experience with risk. All right. And so it's an ongoing conversation. I don't think it's a one-time thing, one-time fix, one-time product release.
I agree. And, as technology advances and different things become possible that weren't possible before, some of them get deployed in the service of you know, back end infrastructure stuff, sure. But a lot of them kind of also play a role in the raw user experience, because here's the reality, and it's the right thing, right? You know, it's like the quality of software that's being built, just not just in finance, but like, you know, especially consumer software, like, yeah. Which is kind of what the space we live in. We can't afford to be even slightly lax about or slightly compromised the beauty of the experience itself. You have to make it interesting. You have to make it smooth. You have for to sure. keep, because otherwise, you know, you're just not going to last. There are two directions that we can go in from here, which I'm yeah. very, we'll go to both of them eventually, but one of them is around like, you know, how do we, what do you, let's go there first. What do you feel based on what are some of the new things that are happening in the space, and not just in fintech, but tech in general, that can hopefully someday take us away from these somewhat archaic protocols like NACHA or, you know, EDI for insurance stuff, you know? Sure. Obviously, some of the candidates that come to mind are blockchain and DeFi and stuff like that. I would love to hear your thoughts on where the future can take us away from these old technologies.
Yeah, no, I think blockchain, right, is right at the top of that conversation. I think you know, it's one of those unique technologies that truly is game changing. And I think we'll look back in 20 years and people that kind of were early adopters and leaned into it will be very much like, you know, early to mid 90s internet. And I know I'm not the first person to say that, but I do think blockchain is exciting. You know, decentralized finance is also interesting. We've actually, it's funny, we didn't, not quite at the same layer or level of infrastructure, but we've actually started to realize that in the gig economy, companies have a need to centralize this particular mm-hmm. portion of finance. And so it's funny seeing decentralized finance kind of be such a big topic when we're going in and having conversations with companies about, you know, giving them a control center to manage their finances from one single place. Right. and so it's kind of funny, but yeah, I think those are two technologies that are up there, you know, outside of even just, you know, finance and tech in internet technology, just at a base level. You know, the whole fourth industrial revolution is exciting to me, right? Like 5G, yeah. autonomous. These things are going to enable services and companies to be built that we never would have imagined. Like never would have imagined. Like, and so there's just a lot of technology is just, people are like, oh, the robots are going to take everybody's job. And I think this technologies that are being built are going to create so many new opportunities and so many different ways of living and working. I'm super excited about it.
Couldn't agree more. We always think about, like, you know, all these things, and we read about like these advances happening in machine learning or deep learning or like you said, blockchain, and we kind of like try to figure out how can I bring this new thing to bear on this problem that I'm trying to solve. And sometimes, to be fair, to be perfectly candid, in fact, some people can over index and just like sure. throw it in there just because it's cool to use without really thinking a lot about whether it's really needed, you know.
Absolutely.
But I think, like, you know, as speaking of this interesting space from the gig wage standpoint, like you're trying to help the gig economy workers, particularly around payroll. But as we talk about the future of money overall, it kind of like it can go much beyond that, right? You know, one of the things that I can think of immediately, like, you know, like gig economy workers don't have access to some of like the retirement products that typically fully employed were like 401ks. So I guess at a high level, what's your vision for gig wage in terms of expanding the space of features and products that you build for the gig economy workers?
That's a great question. Yeah. So we truly believe that, you know, payroll is a wonderful wedge into financial services for this sector. And so if you think about it, we enable a company to send a dollar to a person, right? And we do that in a way that's designed for a gig worker, that specific type of person. Mm-hmm. So if that person worked at a regular job, air quotes, they would get that dollar. And when that dollar landed, the taxes would be pulled out for them. Their 401k would be set aside. Some of it would be split and went into their checks, savings account. If they had garnishments, you know, all of that stuff would be handled. And then they would receive this kind of like net amount, right? And they just have to go to work, get paid, spend their money. Our vision at GigWage is to enable that to be the case for the gig economy. And so when we send that dollar to the gig worker, whether we build, partner, or buy, there will be deduction technology that allows you to set aside those taxes, that allows you to put money into your savings account that may be designed specifically for you as a gig worker, auto deduction for your health benefits, credit building tools, et cetera. And we call this our financial social safety net around these workers. So, yeah. So what we do is we not only do we do the disbursement to get you the money. Here's a, you know, a lot of these people are underbanked and non-banked. And so here's a debit card for you, checking account. And then you can start to build around that so that you have this really positive financial journey and just opportunity and access. Right. And I think that's important. And so we believe we can be a disbursement and distribution platform for all of those types of services. Again, whether we build them or whether we partner with companies on some of them, but the ability to get it to them and make it easy for them to get it.
This sounds like a great partnership for Yield Street and Gigways down the road at some point
to provide
like interesting opportunities for
on the investing side, for sure.
Exactly. And I just kind of think of this, the expanse of the space in terms of so many things that you can do, like, you know, little things like, and there's a question in here. I'm trying to kind of frame it. Let me ask it as a question. How much of education or guidance do you find yourself providing your users, and particularly around better management of money? Like, you know, especially like we said, okay, some things are a little bit more tricky to do. They're not automated for you as a gig economy worker. But on the other hand, you have other avenues that are not available to W-2 workers, like, you know, opening a SEP IRA, which is a much higher contribution limit, or being able to do itemized deductions on various things and being able to give guidance along that. Like, where, what are your thoughts in terms of that side of the help side of
the platform?
Great
question. The gig economy is very horizontal, right? It's quickly approaching about 50% of the US workforce. So you have all types of people making all types of money. On the low to middle income side, we don't think a lot about financial literacy because I believe that they need finances more. You got to have finances to be literate about them. And so our whole goal is to make sure they have access to the capital that they've worked hard to get. As you start to move up the stack, though, and start to, you know, look at kind of middle income to high income earners, a lot of the creator economy, freelancers, those types of people, this is where we think education and financial literacy can be super interesting, right? Because now you're talking about people that are operating as what we call incorporated individuals, right? Sophisticated earners, making a lot more money. How should they be doing it? Should they be receiving it as an individual? Should they be running a small LLC? Should it be this? Should it be that? Should they be setting this aside? And so we're starting to think about, you know, how do you educate that level of the market? Because they've got more money to be literate with. But for the high volume, low to middle income consumers, I think sometimes the financial literacy conversation can be a bit of show and tell when what these people really need is more money.
Yeah. That's a very good point, actually. And like, you know, but like just slowly beginning to, because there is a whole aspirational level, right?
Absolutely.
To people, and it's like, you know, showing them what's possible and helping guiding them along the way to get to that point.
If you give people a peek at the possibility, it'll spark their passion.
Yep.
And so I totally agree with this kind of aspirational and inspirational moment. But the thing that, again, is I'm just specifically about the low to middle income earners that I think is unique is as you start to make more money, your curiosity grows, right? Yep. When you don't have it, there's a level of psychology and stress that exists that doesn't make room for curiosity. And so the key is, can you put more money in people's hands when they want it, where they want it, how they want it? And as you're doing that, start to integrate in, again, some of this learning, aspirational, answering that curiosity. I think that's where there's huge opportunities there.
Absolutely. And to kind of like anchor that back into our into the technology space, like what are some of the ways that you can think we can automate this, like bring technology to bear on this particular aspect, which is super critical as and important.
Yeah. The first step, again, is just access to capital. Right. And so allowing people, and we do this at Gigways, to get money where they want, when they want, how they want, whether that's, you know, a direct deposit, whether that's, you know, again, instant direct to card, whether that's picking up cash at, you know, a particular retailer, you know, whatever that may be, it's access to different pipes. But then I think a lot of the neobanking innovations that you're starting to see are allowing for an eclectic group of accounts to be kind of tied together so that you start to create a cohesive experience, right? And so how do you allow me to manage a multiple, if I'm going from underbanked or non-banked to now I'm banked, right? I don't have the sophistication of the different types of accounts that might exist for me if I'm a person at JP Morgan Chase. And so now what you're looking at is connectivity of neobanks, right? And as all of these different types of neobanks are starting to spin up, what you're starting to see are connectors and APIs that move that data, share that data, and move that money. And I think this is kind of one of those emerging things that'll start to happen, not necessarily consolidation, but connectivity of all of these different types of accounts.
That's and I can just imagine this, like, you know, this dashboard almost that we can go to and like have all of these. Okay, here's the facts, and here's
bingo.
Here's the vision. Here's the journey.
Bingo.
Very curious questions about data. Like, so as part of serving this massive audience, right? There is a lot of data that GigRace platform is collecting. What are and obviously that's data is king, right? You know, that helps you, I'm sure, shape the direction of the product, figure out what to build next, figure out what audience to go to next. What are, have you, just out of curiosity, and whatever you can obviously share reasonably, what are some of the interesting insights that you've gleaned from the data that the platform has collected? And, you know, I'm sure you have like a data warehouse that you look at dashboards and things like that. So what are some of the interesting insights into this economy that you'd say you've gleaned from the data you've collected?
I definitely would love to keep that super high level and super basic.
Yeah, of course.
We won't get into too much details there, but I think one of the correlations that we really like is this, especially over the past 15, 16 months with the pandemic, is the increased earnings based on different types of industries. And I think what we've seen is, you know, in industries like transportation, which over-index in delivery. So, you know, we have all kind of companies, food delivery, auto parts delivery, non-emergency medical delivery. If it can be delivered, we probably pay somebody to do it. But I think this correlation of uptick in earnings per industry, depending on what the kind of macro cycles are, again, it just at the very high levels, there's some really interesting data as we really like dive in deep. But we've got some ideas around that. But I'll tell you this, though. We think of data as a real driver for our business as a fintech. And here's what I mean. So a longtime payroll guy. So ADP, automatic data processing, the little bitty $80 billion payroll company. They do this thing every month called the ADP jobs report, which is based on their data about work trends around traditional W-2 employees. And when they put this report out every month, the market moves, right? The market moves. We have some really interesting things coming down the pipe for the gig economy along those same lines. So that, because the data is really antiquated in our industry, if you think about it, people only report on it once a year when they get their 1099s at the end of the year. So it's late, it's antiquated, it's slow, and it's behind. And so we're going to be bringing a lot more of this real-time, in-depth insights that really help people understand how to think about this growing market. So data is a big deal. We see a lot of cool stuff, and we've got some really big plans around that being a integral part of our business.
Yeah. How big is your data team now? I'm curious, because there's so much wealth there, and there's so much technology to deal with large amounts of data as well.
Yeah. So we've got a small data team. We've only got a couple, but really we think every engineer and every product manager that we bring in really needs to have some kind of baseline of data and understanding. And so it's really just, it's horizontal across everybody we're hiring on the product and engineering team. And like I said, I think we've been, interestingly enough, we've been having conversations with some of the top economists in the country about, you know, how we take our data and really extrapolate it at scale. And so we've got some fun projects coming out, like I said, and, but we track everything.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, there's obviously in the properly anonymized fashion, the kind of insights that you can draw from this super valuable data can shape a lot of things all the way up to potentially legislation around this industry.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's just data is just such a fascinating thing, like the things that, that the power it has when harnessed properly for good and bad, as we
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we have a few more minutes left. I do want to talk a little bit about some non-tech things in terms of your team. And we talked about your journey to where you are, but like specifically around your thoughts on like DEI and diversity and,
sure.
And your, what challenges you faced as, you know, as someone like me, it was a minority candidate in a space that was not classically associated with like venture capital and stuff sure. like that. What was the journey and how did it shape your own team building efforts at GigWage?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you'd have to be living under a rock to think that as a minority, things aren't going to be a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But I've never shied from a complex challenge. So yeah, you know, definitely had my own experiences that were tough and challenging. And, you know, one of the things for me that actually wasn't a problem, but it was something that was always on my mind was building a company. I always knew we were going to build something big and diverse. But we'd hire non-diverse people too, right? White people too. Yeah. And so one of the things I've always thought about was, you know, and I asked this question of everyone pretty much is, you know, have you ever worked for anyone Black? Like, this is a real mm-hmm. question. Like, because that is, and the answer is always no. Like, and so we're really just setting tones and setting trends because these types of things don't happen a lot. But with me being at the helm, it does allow a top-down focus on diversity, right? And so we've been very bold about our DEI goals. We've found that focus is important. So you should hire a very wide-ranging, diverse group of people. But in any given segment of time, call it a year, calendar year, yeah. We found the best results come from when you're focused on a particular section of diverse hires and talent. And so we found if you have one or two areas a year you're focused on, you can really, you know, harness and hit your goals.
Yeah. And I think from the insights that I got from your team, like, you know, this, you've really deployed that to some huge success at GigWage. So like, congratulations. That is a really empowering story for everyone who has that entrepreneurial bent of mind and doesn't fit the traditional, like, you know, we, even at Yale Street, one of our founders is a minority candidate, like is and also an immigrant. And these stories are so powerful that it's important to have, it's for us, especially, you know, founders like you to have a strong voice in that so that we want to see more of this, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much potential that's just kind of going untapped. Cool. So I think we are kind of coming up towards the end of the show. So let me ask you this. So, you know, you're obviously building this company for massive scale. And like, you know, so I'm sure you get this question a lot. So what's your place to be in, let's say, 5 or 10 years or even 100 years? You know, where do you see this going?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. No, I think, you know, we're on a path. We'd love to be a publicly traded company. We'd love to introduce this company and organization to the public markets so that we could continue to scale. When you look up in 5 to 10 years, I think, you know, currently we are in the midst of planning our international rollout. And so we're domestic only today. And so, but I think when you look up in 10 years, this mission of helping every company in the world pay every contract in the world will be a lot closer to being realized. We'll have built something that's big and impactful and that matters and that reaches people at scale. And so, yeah, no, we've got grand, audacious goals, and we're excited about it.
That's amazing. And yeah, the audience that you're trying to, so the addressable market is massive.
Massive. So,
especially growing every day as more and more of the Bingo. World goes into the gig economy and kind of jettisons the old, you know, 9 to 5 or in our startup world, like 8 to 8.
8 to 8.
Hey, listen, it was an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Craig. Thanks for coming on the show. And we would love to have you back. And there's awesome. So much more to talk about. And it's just so very, it's energizing for us to chat with like founders and successful entrepreneurs like yourself. So thank you. Thanks again for taking the time to be on our show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And that about wraps it up for us. Thanks for tuning in. Just before we go, check us out at yieldstreet.com for our most recent open offerings. And again, if you're an originator, just email us at originations@yieldstreet.com or just hit the Raise Capital link in our footer and someone will get back to you to help out. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.